This week on Pass Gas, we're talking about Katsuhiro Yuio, a legendary drifter that took his AE86, you know, on the 2 days of Japan and drifted it around with his massive 160 horsepower engine. We also have Jimmy Hilton and Adam Knappik on the pod today. So honored.
We're here.
Thanks for having us,
yeah.
Man.
Are you guys excited to hear about drifting?
I am. I could talk all day about racing.
I'm ready to hear about Corollas.
Hell yeah. So let's get into it. The hell I can't might be one of the most motivating sayings in history, without cultural borders and a life deep within the human psyche. For many people, it goes something like this: being given a challenge and then summoning everything you can do to overcome it. And if overcoming that challenge also happens to be in line with your goals and aspirations, it could set the stage for something great, something life-changing. When Katsuhiro Yuio got his first taste of drifting, he was told he couldn't do it. He was too old. But little did the world know that his passion for motorsports and engineering would combine with his immensely tough work ethic to make him a true legend in the sport, and within just a couple of short years. But who was Katsuhiro Yuio? What was the moment that his life changed forever? What makes him a legend in professional drifting? And finally, what's he been up to since his career's heyday? Today on Pass Gas, Katsuhiro Yuio.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about sports.
Welcome, guys.
Hey, what's up, Joe?
Hello, Joe.
It took a lot to get through that paragraph.
Yeah.
Can you tell that my mind is mush right now?
I can, just a little. Plus, pronouncing that name is always fun.
Katsuhiro Yuio.
U-A-O.
Katsuhiro.
U-A-O.
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 U-A-O. Yeah, oh yeah. Those voices you're hearing are Adam Knappik and Jimmy Hilton. Welcome, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you. Thank you for
glad to be
us.
On the show.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys could jump in and hang out with me for the day.
I gotta say, this is a deep cut, this guy.
This is Adam's suggestion.
Yeah. Ooh. This is, I was not expecting this. When I saw this come across the desk Thursday afternoon, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is the Corolla guy to me. And
yeah.
That might be kind of like, some people think it's, you know, DK, but I really
Drift
think...
Drift King, for anyone who doesn't Drift know King. What Adam's talking
so,
about.
But I really think he's the one that really set off the Corolla. I mean, he... The style that he has, I love this guy. He's so cool. Old yeah. school.
You're talking about the AE86, right?
The 86, yeah.
I'm not super knowledgeable about, I know like the main beats of it, you know? But this is going to be a fun one for me because you guys are huge JDM drift guys. I'm out of my element, honestly.
I'm out of my element right now.
Yeah, we all are. But this was your suggestion. You know about this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he was great. I mean, he's one of those guys you think of when you think of like a JDM drifter coming from D1 Japan, coming to Irwindale, riding the bank with the Corolla. He's, you know, the hero that took down guys with like big horsepower stuff. So
yeah.
Those days are unfortunately are gone, but like that's still cool that it lives in the ethos somehow. And it's been a while. This guy, like, it's hard to find videos of him like drifting and stuff because it was so long ago.
So he was like a big deal.
Yeah.
In the lore of drifting.
Yeah, lore and just the style of the Corolla. He just like was like white T37s and keeping the Corolla white and just like really, really simple. His car was crazy light.
Yeah.
Stripped everything out and it's just cool, man.
Yeah. So that voice is Adam Knappik.
Hello. And if I had a catchphrase, it would just be do better.
Do better. Nice. That's your whole catchphrase.
Just
that?
The whole thing, yeah.
Put that on a shirt.
Just imagine if you walked up and you're like, dude, I'm so sorry. You know, I didn't pull this off or that off. And like somebody on your team is like, just do better.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're not even mad. You're just disappointed.
It's inspirational and a little bit aggressive.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. And then my co-host for this week is Jimmy Hilton.
Hey, what's up? If I had a catchphrase, it would be you win some, you lose some.
Guys, you don't have to preface it with if I had a catchphrase. You just kind of say your catchphrase.
Okay. It's me.
This is my
Jimmy
first
Hilton.
Time.
Yeah,
you win some, you lose some.
Oh, nice. Yeah. This is great. I like the zeal that you put behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys for coming on. They have regular day jobs. They're being really nice by filling in for James and Nolan right now. But Adam is our technical producer. as well as shop manager.
Yep.
And then Jimmy is a producer as well as mascot for Donut.
Yeah. Being a mascot's a hard job.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Jimmy's the heart of Donut. Mm-hmm. I'm the shop daddy.
There's a lot of dances involved with being the heart, you know?
Yeah. When you wore the Power Ranger outfit.
Yeah, that was a lot.
One of my favorite moments. All right, let's jump into it. Katsuhiro was born in 1972 in Tamanashi, Kumamoto, Japan, by strict parents who raised him to have a tough work ethic. Though he was known to be a reserved child, he was fascinated by cars and motorcycles. His father was a fisherman and spent many long stints at sea. At a young age, Yuio would spend holidays and any other time away from his studies helping his dad on the boat, which is also where he developed an interest in engine building and repair. While Katsuhiro has been regarded as reserved his whole life, not just during childhood, he also possesses a strong competitive spirit. When you combine that with a strong work ethic, great things are possible. By Yuio's mid-20s, he'd put in some years working in shops and started competing in amateur Gymkhana events with a variety of performance platforms, including an R32 Skyline GTR.
That's a pretty jump into the deep end.
Yeah.
I didn't know he did that in a GTR.
So I know of Gymkhana stuff as the Hoonigan, like, drifting Gymkhana stuff. With a GTR, it would be hard to drift with four-wheel drive, right?
So, I mean, Gymkhana, like, the preface behind it is, like, yeah. Autocross that you slide, essentially. Okay. It's a coned course.
Yeah.
And you go through and try to do as quick as you can. And I know everyone always says that drifting is the slowest way around a corner, but in some aspects, that's why in rally, they still slide the car around. Ends up setting the car up much better. So in Gymkhana, the whole thing is just super, super tight slides. It's not a lot of, like, counter-steer. It's very... GTR would be great because it's all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Evos are good at it. Subarus are pretty dope at it, too. So, yeah, I could see that for sure.
To have that as one of his first cars that he's competing in, that's an expensive car.
Yeah.
If he really bought that or a shop gave that to him to compete in.
Yeah, let's just say his dad caught a lot of fish for that.
Yeah, big fish guy.
Yeah.
Big fish guy.
For those who aren't familiar, Gymkhana is a... Okay, I guess we're explaining Gymkhana. For those who aren't familiar, Gymkhana is a high-performance driving event. It's like autocross in that it's predetermined course outlined in cones, except it can be a bit higher speed at times, and it includes different types of obstacles and driving techniques. So basically what Adam said. It's not uncommon for oversteer to be a welcome technique, either, like drifting. So you're like, whipping it into corners... handbrake.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Power through.
It's definitely a fast track to becoming excellent at car control and driving on the ragged edge. Is that a common term? Ragged edge?
In the world, yeah. Not,
I haven't heard that term in a while.
In a while, yeah. I thought you said not at all. And I was like, dude, come on.
Come on, Jimmy.
Come on. Do better.
Not a big fish guy over here.
Yeah. He's already using his catchphrase.
Yeah, nice. Katsuhiro later explained how Gymkhana developed his car control skills in a Super Street article back in 2003 during the prime of his drifting career.
In Japan, in Gymkhana, the cornering speed.
Gymkhana.
Is Gymkhana?
Gymkhana or
Gymkhana?
Okay.
Jimmy-Khana.
Yeah, nice.
Just dropping bombs.
Jimmy kind of blowing it right now.
In Japan, in Gymkhana, the cornering speed is a lot faster. Because of the slick tires, because I'm used to the speed, I'm able to control the car at the slower speeds for drifting.
At the age of 26, Katsuhiro and a friend went to watch drifters compete on a local toge course in the mountains above his town. As Yuio recalls,
one of my younger colleagues took me to the toge runs and challenged me. He said, "You cannot do this," and I proved him wrong.
Except he said toge.
Now I have to train myself to say it the right way.
Yeah. He'd known about drifting for some time. In fact, it was probably hard not to in late 90s Japan. The underground subculture exploded in popularity several years prior. Until that point, Katsuhiro was happy to keep on ripping stages in Gymkhana, but something drew him in. After checking it out in person, he was fascinated by this art of car control. I mean, who wouldn't be? Especially someone who was deep into performance driving and the technology behind it. His friend told him that he was too old and could never achieve the same skill as the local hotshot drifters that were barely 20 years old.
Which, really quick, can we talk about, he's like not even 30 yet.
Yeah.
Like, what do you
mean?
Late
20s.
Yeah, too old.
Yeah.
That's like, crazy.
People barely got their licenses at 20 in Japan. It takes much longer.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they really that much better?
And he's been like performance driving on Gymkhana.
Yeah. Sorry, like, dude, you're washed up.
Yeah.
Too late.
Go find a maiden and settle down.
Better get on your dad's fishing boat.
Katsuhiro, being the competitive and hardworking guy he is, got to work. Not just to prove his friend wrong, he was genuinely interested and wanted to pursue this fascinating form of high-performance driving and take it to a competitive level.
Whoa,
that's heavy.
I mean, if someone tells me I'm too old to do something, I'm like, sign me up for the next one-on-one class. There.
It's all, dude, you're probably right. What? Oh, yeah, I give up really easy.
My back's going to hurt after this, but I'm going to prove you wrong.
I was just thinking the other day, like, I can't remember what it was, but I was like, I'm too old to do that. I'm like 37. Like, so many people who are millionaires now change their career at 45 or something. Like, we talk about this all the time, how like 37 nowadays is like a 25-year-old in the 90s, like...
Yeah.
20s is just take care of ourselves better. Yeah. And like,
theoretically.
Yeah. 30s is the new 20s.
Yeah. I think someone else said that.
Yeah.
I think also, like, the whole age thing, it's just more of a spectacle. How young can you get them, you know? So that's why they also push for that in Formula One and all of racing. That's the big thing. But you technically don't really hit your peak or strive at, like, until 25 to 28, possibly up to like 32. After that, there's a decline because one of the things is obviously like your vision goes at night.
Yes.
But like, it's so funny how people are so sensationalized about like, oh, dude, he's 14. He's like, yeah. And then he's been doing it for 10 years and he's already 24. Is he washed up at that point? Is like, I don't like, where's that come from?
When you're 14, you haven't even grown into your body yet.
No, it's all marketing.
Yeah.
So.
And I think the only things that like start to go are like vision, maybe fast twitch muscle stuff. But like, I felt the strongest probably when I was like 34.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was finally coordinated enough to play sports.
Well, I'm glad me and you are justifying this as Jimmy is sitting here, the youngster. He's like, don't worry, I don't know what you guys are talking about, dude.
But also you don't like, when I worked in a retirement home forever, you had to take this dementia class every year. And the last
had to take it?
Yeah. Cause whoa. I was a chef and you know, like in case I ran into someone with dementia, I needed to know
how to deal with somebody with dementia. I thought they were checking if you were losing.
No. It's not a test. It was a class. Yeah.
Like this is really sweet. Do you know the difference? Like it should be salty.
Do you know the difference between a tomato and a potato?
That's the dementia class.
Yeah.
That's a car. I don't mean to make fun of people with dementia.
They won't remember, says Cole.
But anyways, the point of this was your brain doesn't stop developing until you're 26. And the last thing that develops is judgment. So
that checks out.
Yeah.
Judgment to take a corner at appropriate speed or to brake late or something. I feel like maybe the best time to be a race car driver is 28, you know?
I mean, I don't disagree.
Yeah. So,
I think I got plenty of years left in me.
Oh, I'm not saying that. You are definitely like, you're killing it right now. Keep doing it.
I better sign up then.
Yes. Yeah.
You're almost done developing, dude.
Are you 26?
I'm 28 this year.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he's done.
You're done, dude.
No. It's too late.
It's over.
We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials.
As it got deeper and deeper into the scene, Katsuhiro Ueo became friends with drifting legend Keiichi Tsuchiya.
Ooh, dude, my boy.
Jimmy's so excited
Drift
right
King.
Now.
I love
Side
Keiichi.
Note, I've got gloves signed by him.
Oh, that's it.
You should see all the Keiichi stuff I have in my closet. Jackets, gloves, steering
all
wheels.
All signed?
No, they're Keiichi. He had like this like shop called K Office,
and
he
had
like steering wheels, jackets.
That's
gloves.
A sick name.
Yeah, K Office.
That's sick.
So, we've talked about him a bunch in the past. Definitely check out our podcast episodes for more on him. Ueo quickly took a shine to the Corolla 86 chassis, Tsuchiya's own personal favorite, which also goes with Hachiroku, 86 Sprinter, Treno, or simply the Corolla. 86 is an iconic rear-wheel drive platform for a reason. It possesses a revvy, naturally aspirated 1.6-liter dubbed the 4AG. There are a bunch of versions of this power plant, but in general, the 20-valve iteration, commonly swapped into Corollas as well, made about 160 horsepower and 120 torque, and whereas the 16-valve, which Katsuhiro is kind of known for having into his car, is 110 horsepower and 100 torque stock.
How do you even break the tires loose with that low of power?
You use really skinny tires. And actually, that's where stretching tires came from. So if you have a performance tire, you want a sidewall that does flex to a certain point.
Yeah.
It helps adhere to the concrete and cement and everything. So, but if you stretch that, then there's one less thing to take absorb, like any impact.
Yeah.
And so it'll break away easier. So drifters started putting like cheap tires on, like 195s on like a 8-inch or 9-inch wheel. They'll stretch it and then they'll pump up the PSI to like 50, 60. I mean, they'll go much higher too.
Pump up the PSI.
Pump. That's
pump
your
new, is up that, the pressure.
That should be your new catchphrase.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the pressure's on. It's Jimmy Hilton. Pump the PSI.
So yeah, that's how they did it. And that's why like those Corollas unfortunately faded off because it didn't have big power.
Yeah.
And drifting became more and more with about angle. So like, but when it was like less angle, and it was able to keep up the speed. Like UAO was really known for like high speed entries and just being flat out and just jerking the wheel and going for it.
Wow.
So like, that's why it suited it so well.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was cool.
That torque is horrible.
The torque is really bad. And that's, I used to have a Corolla and to the wheels, obviously you're going to make way more, but mine was like, had Weber carburetors on it, semi-tune.
Wait, you made carburetors?
Yeah, it's time to get carbureted. This is Joe Weber. God, these are horrible.
Do better.
That's the only one that's working.
Dang, dude. He's really good at that.
But yeah, mine made 100 horsepower to the wheels, and I felt like a hero, but man, it was slow. It was just like inside, it feels super fast, like a Honda.
Yeah.
Outside, it's just like barely moving.
That's funny. Yeah. It's like when you see yourself on video doing sports and you're like, that's what I look like.
Yeah, that's what's happening. I should quit, dude. Yeah. I'm too old for this.
That's embarrassing.
Outside of being rear-wheel drive, it makes a lot of sense why you'd choose this platform. Small, lightweight, maneuverable, inexpensive to run, all the makings of a proper handling beast. It was a popular chassis then, and it still is today, although it's extraordinarily expensive.
It's stupid
just
expensive.
Ridiculous.
Over the top.
Yeah, not even worth it.
No, not at all. That's for another podcast. And tuners are capable of pushing that little 1.6 to far more than 120 horsepower with some hot rodding.
Hot dogging.
Hot dogging.
The 4AGE is one of the more popular variants of this engine, right?
Yeah.
Was that the high horsepower, the 120?
Well, what sucks is like, 160? Or what's funny is that it's always called the 4AG, right, mm-hmm. Jimmy?
Yeah.
But there's a 20 valve and a 16 valve. Yeah. The 20 valve was in the front wheel drive cars, which is whack.
Yeah.
But they put it into the rear wheel drive because obviously it had more power, high revving, all that good stuff.
Yeah. You had to relocate a ton of stuff to do that.
Tons of stuff. Back in the day, you'd have to like chop the firewall up and do a bunch of things to it. So, and then there's the 1.6 variant. That's the one that came with it. I really like the way that one sounds. There's something about it.
That's the silver top, right?
The silver and blue top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's 4AG, 20 valve, 16 valve.
Okay, sick.
Yeah. Throughout the course of his pro drifting career, UAO had between 180 and 230 horsepower, depending on the block, crank tuning, and other common ways to bump up the horsepower naturally. As he put it later,
I don't need power. It's all about balance. If I have more balance, then I don't need the power. Dude, that's a good catchphrase.
It's all about the balance.
It's all about the balance. Your power.
Do you have a... like an LS3 in your car.
That's right.
There's no balance in that.
No, there is not. Just balancing my checkbook. As automotive journalist and performance industry personality John Nadeiri said of UAO's A86 on Instagram in 2020,
Not just any 86, but my favorite 86 ever. Katsuhiro Ueo took his 85 Corolla Sprinter Trano to the top rung of the 2002 D1 GP Championship, and I was on hand just 1 year later to watch him dismantle the field at 2003 D1 Grand Prix USA at Irwindale, where he vanquished such heavyweights as Taniguchi's evil 430 horsepower S15 and Imamura's high-revving, flame-shooting FD. The best part is that he owned Irwindale's intimidating banks with nothing more than a 4AG AE92 Koki motor built by Revolver's legendary Hitoshi Matsuda.
Dude, good job on that name.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good.
Just killed it, dude.
But you messed up Grand Prix.
Right, no, I know.
Yeah. We'll just let that go, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even going to mention that. What do you think was in that S15? What kind
SR.
Of motor?
Oh, the motor? Yeah, it was a SR20.
Oh.
Yeah.
You can get that up to 430?
You can get them up to 650.
What?
Yeah, I had a SR that made 650 horsepower. Not for the longest time, but it made it.
Holy shit.
I've seen 750 on some, but that's the Scorch Racing one.
Yeah, and then you could do a different head on the SR20 called the Neo, and that gets rid of the what's called rocker arms. They tend to fly off at high horsepower, and you could get those up to like 800-900 horsepower. It's easy, but...
Out of a four-cylinder?
That's crazy, isn't it?
That is insane.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
If you peruse through the old internet forums and drift article comment sections, a lot of folks consider Katsuhiro to be the first person to popularize running white Volk TE37s on the AE86 chassis. We think of this as just another common, albeit quite good-looking, setup. And it's hard to think of the drift and track scene without it.
The Ueo spec. That's what it's called.
They had that, yeah.
The 14x7, 4x1, 14.3. spec.
Leave it to Jimmy.
Oh my God, I'm a bunch of dorks today.
Dude, what a nerd.
Sorry, I like wheels.
No, I really appreciate this because we keep it pretty surface level with Pass Gas. I'm really, you guys are like deep in this and I'm here for it.
We're in the shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in the shit.
I love those wheels though. I want a set of them so badly.
You don't?
I don't have a Corolla.
Your wheel estate empire is not big enough?
No, I've been lacking on the wheel estate right now. So
how many wheel sets do you have in your garage right now?
Sets or wheels?
Whatever is a bigger
number. I've got 54 wheels.
Oh my God. That's a lot of wheel estate.
Yeah. Wheel estate's big. My goal is to get to 100 by 30.
I mean, you should just open up like a boutique wheel shop at that point, right?
He doesn't want to sell them.
I don't like selling my stuff. Yeah.
Hold up.
I got that hoarder mentality.
You said you don't own a Corolla, but do you own anything that's center lock?
No, I don't.
Do you have center lock wheels?
I have way too many center lock wheels.
What?
And they're cool.
They are cool.
They're neat.
Yeah, one day you're going to have like a big man cave and you're going to want to put them in the man cave.
That's the thought, you know?
Yeah.
Once I get this giant garage, I'll just put them all up on the wall.
Yeah.
And they'll look sick.
Man.
There's a process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one extra wheel in my house.
Oh, nice.
Spare.
Let me know if you want a few more. I can find them for you.
He's just trying
more spares.
Yeah. He's just trying to find places to hoard his stuff.
Oh, I'm trying to find... Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you want to bank your wheels at my house?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe. Actually, yeah, I'll take some.
Cool. I've got some paperwork then for you.
Oh, God. An NDA.
Yeah.
If you dig through YouTube, there's so much straight-up fascinating footage of Ueo both competing and ripping up and down his local Touge Road dubbed the Milk Road Run.
Whoa.
Have you ever heard of the Milk Road Run?
After I have Taco Bell at 3 a.m.
Oh, God. Dude, it comes out. That's such a disturbing visual.
It's so bad.
Why did you do that?
And why is it white?
You asked if I've known about
that
it.
That was my question.
So I'm more concerned about that.
Yeah.
Unless it was like Chocolate Road.
Yeah, Chocolate Milk Road. Oh, you
get checked.
God. The Milk Road Run is a course with every type of corner imaginable. You got your short, tight hairpins. You got lots of consecutive corners that you can link together. And an interesting mix of road elevation and single/double radiused corners. It was here that Katsuhiro first honed his oneness with the AE86, ignoring the poor bumpy road service and local traffic, to eventually master the course. That'd be disturbing thing to come around the corner and some guy's learning how to drift.
Whoops.
Oh, sorry. Watching him smoothly yet aggressively initiate massive drifts at massive angles by simply cutting the wheel and clutch kicking behind the wheel of one of his several 86 bills is a sight to behold. He never uses a handbrake, and it never gets old. Oh,
that's sick.
That's crazy.
That part's cool. Yeah. He does have a handbrake, and he does use it, but it's very, very rare. So.
Yeah.
And so it's funny that like people always think of him as a smooth style.
Yeah.
When you watch in-cabin footage, it's just absolute mayhem
chaos.
In there.
That's sick, yeah.
It's so cool. There's a video of him driving his like off-white Corolla that he's got, and it's got no sponsors on it, and he's just hammering through this track.
Yeah.
And then they show in-car footage of his feet and what it's doing, and it's insane. Yeah.
He's doing the dance.
Yeah. Man, that dance is so cool. I like Hurt from Hoonigan posts
a lot of his stuff. Yeah.
He wears Crocs when he drifts.
It drives me crazy. I hate Crocs, if I go on the record and say that.
Me too.
They're just the worst shoe. Well,
we're
going to
lose
world.
Our sponsorship now.
Good.
Katsuhiro quickly became known as an iconic purveyor of the AE86 chassis, whose driving style and competitive success was attributed to skill alone and not big power and big budgets. There are so many accounts of him showing up turbocharged S15s and other high horsepower hardware with no more than 180 naturally aspirated horsepower under his hood. That is a cool flex to be like,
that is,
oh, you
super
need all
flex.
That power?
Yeah.
I got none of it.
Yeah. It's a testament to sharpening one's skills at the limit and always refining and tweaking one's setup, all fueled by dedication and hard work. From as early as 2000, 2 years after that fateful day on the Touge, up until mid-2006, he wielded his little Hachi with loads of success in Japan's D1 Grand Prix, its premier professional drift series. He'd probably keep on running it for many more years, but changing rules, increasing course sizes, and the increasing prevalence of much higher horsepower turbofare eventually, finally, meant his setup was outgunned.
Dun, so, dun, dun.
Yeah, if you're going down like a big straight and you're going into like a bigger turn, I'm assuming you need a lot more power than...
A lot more power, and then judges just wanted like everyone to get closer to the wall, and they want to see more tire smoke, and it just be much faster and everything. So yeah, unfortunately, it just went by the wayside.
Such
Goliath
a shame.
Finally killed David. The story nobody wants to tell.
A 2009 Speed Hunters article put it best.
Ueo stuck with the AE86 for 5 years, exhibiting one of the most extreme driving styles known, in particular for his barely believable full throttle flicks that would allow him to throw the car into corners at silly angles and speeds. The power war that is to be this day going on in D1 forced Ueo to abandon the AE86, a decision that was also taken as D1 organizers were beginning to abandon smaller and more technical circuits like Nikko and Tsukuba in favor of faster tracks like Suzuka and Fuji.
But let's back up to 2002. It was an especially awesome year for Katsuhiro as he and his little Hachi won the 2002 D1 GP Championship.
He was 30. Super old.
So old,
yeah,
dude.
So
just
old.
God.
Barely even. He actually, fun fact, had to use a walker
dude,
when he got out.
He was known for
it was crazy. He had
doing
a quick
clutch
release.
Kicks with his cane.
With the cane.
Yeah. That makes me think of like that those prank videos where they dressed like Messi up as an old guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was like, that's obviously a young guy with a prosthetic mask. The key to a successful showing at D1 GP and really any drift competition are four criteria: angle, line, speed, style. How extreme of an angle can the driver achieve? How close to the racing line can they stay? And how fast can they do it all? This is basically what you were explaining.
Yeah.
Style is all about how fluid the car moves and how committed the driver is, how extreme the combination of the driver's efforts looks. So, like, how you judge dressage or dancing.
Mm.
I want to stray away from things like figure skating and dancing when we talk about drifting because it doesn't sound as cool.
Oh,
so I always kind of say it's like bull riding because it's still bull riding is still judged.
Oh, yeah,
it's judged on how they're like holding on. And then I don't know much about it, but I know it's judged.
Yeah.
I know it's extreme and crazy. And there's no bull rider who's going to be explaining a sport. He's like, yo, it's just like figure skating or dancing. So
It's more elegant than bull riding to me, though. Because, like, yeah. I get the force thing. You're really, like, fighting a ton of forces. You're keeping your balance. And then you're trying to look good doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
But then there's just that, like, elegance of them, like, two cars drifting the exact same angle.
Yeah.
A foot apart.
Doing the dance.
Yeah. It's like...
it's like
the most aggressive style of dancing.
Yeah. Tango.
Like that. Tango, yeah. Katsuhiro's performance throughout the 2002 season was off the charts. Take one particular tandem, meaning two drivers drifting together with Hiroshi Takahashi at Tsukuba. Both drivers are in AE86s with similar power output, yet when it's Katsuhiro's turn to lead, he puts down extreme angle after extreme angle inside of just 21 seconds, keeping perfect control and seemingly never in risk of spinning. Even when Takahashi smacks into him at the end of the run.
Hey, so there's old option videos.
Yeah.
And there's one called Crash Kings. Oh, and he's...
That's such a good...
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad because there's so many cool JDM cars just getting absolutely demolished.
Oh, man.
But he's in a bunch of these and he's not the one usually crashing. He's the one that like avoids it.
Yeah.
There's a couple... You've seen this
the
one,
The green
right?
Corolla, right?
That's one of them. The other one was an orange one that does a complete 360.
Yeah, I've seen.
Like, there's a car in front of them. It dips a tire and it digs into the ground and does a complete 360 in front of them.
Oh, man.
Like, in the air, and he avoids it. And then he's got a bunch of other ones where he just keeps avoiding stuff.
So he went so fast that people are trying to catch up to him to the point where they lost control, smashed into him a bunch.
Yeah, that would happen. They would kind of wash out is more common what would happen behind them. And then this guy that I'm talking about happened to be in the front. He just like crashed out. Also, probably trying to keep up with his style because it's like, you know, you get like in a boxing match, you know somebody's style and you're like trying to anticipate stuff.
Yeah.
So you're going to go up against this guy the same way. You're like, dude, I got to match this guy.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's too far, too heavy for people, man.
Yeah. That would throw me off if I was trying to follow him. I was like, hey, wait.
Yeah.
He's like, taking off. Where'd he go? Yeah.
That's all 110 horsepower right there. So Katsuhiro won round one, then placed fourth and second in rounds 5 and 6. There were other Hachis in the field, but the best they could muster in the season championship was 7th place. Katsuhiro had a gaggle of S15s, an S14, and a rear-wheel drive converted R34 Skyline GTR right behind him in the points chase all season long. He persevered, though, worked hard, and ended up with just a 6-point deficit between him and Nobutero Taniguchi in second.
Also known as No One Better. N-O-B.
Oh, yeah, Nob.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Whoa, that's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Fun fact.
The following 2003 season was a generally successful run for Katsuhiro as he fought to defend his title. He won round 6 as well as D1 GP's exhibition race in Southern California and ended up in third.
Did you go to that, Adam?
I don't know if I actually did. I did and I was working.
That's just so cool to me that they came here.
Yeah.
For the exhibition stuff.
I know, that was super cool. Irwindale and then... And Long Beach at the ports.
And then I think they did Vegas too, right?
Yeah, Vegas.
Not bad for encountering some mechanical issues along the way. Journalist John Nadari was on hand for Super Street Magazine when the D1 GP came over to America at SoCal's Irwindale Speedway that year.
On the fast sweepers at the start of the course, Katsuhiro would fall behind. By the first hairpin, where the big boosters of Nob and Imamura would slow down to make the corner, Katsuhiro's tricky Tirreno would come right up and sometimes even pass them, with a smooth, flowing, perfect drift.
Nice.
What a boss.
As Katsuhiro put it himself in that article.
In a 200-meter turn, the turbocharged cars must modulate their throttle inputs. They cannot step on the gas all the way around the corner. But in my car, I can throttle it all the way around the corner. At the D1 GP USA, the judges are right in front of the tightest corner. The other cars had to slow down and get off the gas. But with my car, I could stay on the gas on all the way around. That's so cool.
That's cool. Leaves an impression on the judges when you just hear that instead of just like coming off throttle, right?
Yeah.
So it's the sights and sounds also, right?
Yeah. Just like bull riding.
Just like bull riding and dancing.
Like bull riding.
After the 2003 season, Katsuhiro's success was mixed. While he won an event here and there, he never got at the top of the season championship like he did in 2002 or as close as 2003. Nevertheless, his style never ceased to amaze. As Dino Dalle Carbonar wrote of Katsuhiro's wheeling at Sugo in 2004.
I jokingly asked Ueo to go full out Zenki Kudasai, but never expected him to actually do so, especially after hearing most of the photographers complaining that drivers weren't driving hard enough for the press ride-alongs. Ueo clutch-kicked the AE86 at full speed, entering the first corner at Sugo at such an insane angle, my jaw dropped in amazement. He proceeded to drift the whole way around the track, giving me one of the most incredible and memorable rides of my life.
Dude, that's sick.
Yeah.
Dang.
With a journalist in the car?
Yeah, and all the feet movement. You're just seeing him dance. And you're just like strapped in the passenger seat.
Oh my God, I'm going to throw up my carbonara.
And he's just dancing.
I did a two-seater ride-along in IndyCar Long Beach last weekend. Mm-hmm.
Did they give you carbonara before that?
They gave me so much carbonara, it was a mistake. I was like, I'm going to be sick. I'm just not going to eat anything beforehand. Mm-hmm. This is early in the morning. So those cars are detuned. They said they're like 70% of what a normal Indy car is. Plus you have the extra weight of the other rider. And he wasn't really going for it, you know?
Yeah.
We still got up to like probably 150, 160 on the straightaways and...
Solid in Long Beach?
Yeah.
Was that bumpy?
Yeah. But I could tell that he wasn't really going balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Because like... You know, why? This is like mostly people who have never been in a car this fast before.
Yeah.
But I was like, come on.
come on, guys.
Come on.
Well, you're behind him, right? Like Goose.
Yeah, I didn't.
You should slap him on the head.
Yeah. Something I didn't realize was like I'm a little bit taller, so my head was sticking up. And at that speed, the air is trying to rip your helmet off.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Whoa.
That's a sensation I've never felt before.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting situation that happened in Katsuhiro's 2005 season. He'd beaten up one of his AE86 competition chassis so much that it was interfering with his success. So basically, this thing's beat, the engine's toast, whatever. It would take a long time for most folks to track down this kind of handling issue, but he determined the root cause quite quickly.
Ueo finally discovered the cause of all his demise during the sixth round.
JDM Option International wrote,
while inspecting a body panel, he discovered that the rivets used to strengthen the chassis had become stretched. Since there were holes drilled in the body for this modification, the entire vehicle was absorbing the flex much more than its stock form. When this occurs, the vehicle will not perform the way the driver commands it to, no matter how effectively the suspension is set. Because of this, Ueo switched back to his first machine, which had already had a stitch-welded chassis, a much tougher method than a riveted chassis.
Can you put this in layman's terms, Adam?
So basically stitch welding is literally going through the chassis itself and welding the pieces that make a car. Because a car isn't one big piece of metal, it's multiple put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually, rarely do they use rivets. That's only when you combine two metals that don't want to adhere together. So let's say aluminum and steel. But probably what they mean over here by the rivet is a spot weld. So literally you have two pieces of metal that will go on top of each other like a puzzle. And then you have a machine that comes down, looks like a C-clamp, and heats it up and fuses the two metal pieces together.
Okay.
So that's how most cars are put together. And then they'll put, not Bondo, like the putty,
sealant,
thank you, stuff all over it to help with dust getting in, also a little bit of rigidity.
Mm-hmm.
But in a race car, you'll get all of that out and you'll weld it with like a MIG welder usually.
Yeah.
In every, I don't know, every 6 to 8 inches or so, you'll throw a weld on there to keep the chassis nice and rigid.
So. Okay. So, yeah, when it's spot welded, it tends to start to stretch and separate a little bit?
Yeah, it's got the ability to, just because it's like metallurgy, right? So you just bend metal back and forth, it's sooner or later going to want to fatigue. Yeah. That's what's happening.
Okay. Cool. I mean, not cool.
Not cool.
Katsuhiro went on to have an excellent overall performance in the following seventh round of that season. He beat the crap out of his chassis so much that it was getting worn out and inhibiting his results. It's wild that he not only figured this out, but also had a spare AE86 chassis on hand that was already stitch welded, meaning what Adam said. we're explaining everything right before we explain
it. Dude, you guys are getting to the cake too soon.
We already talked about stitch welding, which makes it more rigid, stiffer overall, so that it can handle better and handle the torquing of the chassis. Katsuhiro had a deep understanding of race engineering and setup, but it's not all that common that the driver is also the lead chassis engineer in any professional racing effort.
I would say, honestly, like in the drift scene, that's really common.
Yeah.
But any other professional series, the guys usually don't know what they're,
yeah,
what all the bracing and chassis and all this stuff. The driver's job is to come in,
yeah,
be like, this is how the car feels. And then you've got other people, you've got your team that are supposed to kind of figure it out, so to speak.
The brainiacs.
Yeah. But in drifting, it's such like a grassroots-ish sport.
Yeah.
I think that's what's common. And then in like grassroots, well, actually any grassroots motorsport, so like Miata Cup or any like Time Attack stuff, it's usually the driver is the head guy.
Yeah. It just saves you a ton of money if you understand your car like that and can make those fixes.
Yeah, tons of money. Yeah. If once you figure it out. But you spend a lot of money figuring it out.
Yeah.
So it's a paradigm.
After dealing with mechanical issues for most of 2006, Katsuhiro switched to a more powerful Z33 Nissan 350Z later in the year and never returned back to the Hachi again.
No.
The Z's cool.
'86 is way cooler.
It's not bad. Yeah.
He finally needed more power. The pace had gotten so fast, and it was costing him in blown Toyota four-cylinder engines. After that, he campaigned a turbocharged S15 with some success, and to this day is still out there competing to agree with turbocharged platforms. There's no doubt that Katsuhiro had a lot of ups and downs in professional drifting. Considering he drove the hell out of the AE86 chassis and proved that hard work and skill beats big horsepower, it's mostly ups. But it's also important to point out that his skills have gone beyond the tarmac.
So it's pretty crazy, though, is if you look at, like, so what, in 2002, right?
Yeah.
He had a Corolla. He had already been driving for X amount of years. So it's safe to assume by 2002, an 86 is
20 years old. No, not 20.
It's less than that.
Yeah.
14 years old. That's not that old.
Yeah.
Like,
that's like driving a 2009 car right now.
Yeah. So it was actually not far off of its prime.
Yeah.
Like right now, yeah, the Corolla is super far off because of its age. But, you know, when you talk to me about like a 10-year-old car, I still got like a 2000 Honda Civic Si in my head. But it's not the case, right?
I know.
So it's like, if you think about it, he had, like, now he's in a S13.
Oh, okay.
Right. And like the newest S13 in Japan, I think, is like a 97. That's super rare, though.
98 was the last year.
Let's call it an average of like 94 is where your 13 is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that car is 30 years
That's
old.
That's old.
Yeah.
And so he's gone back to it with new technology, different motor and stuff.
That's just a testament to like the cars that were coming out of Japan in the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
And late 80s is like so balanced, so solid. And still hold up in this like professional.
Yeah. Well, they lent themselves to it because it was so little metal.
Yeah.
And then everything you put in was a cage and structural. So it stayed light at the same time. And then the suspension geometry was still great. Like we still use a lot of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool.
That
but it's funny.
Cool.
He went, you know, he had a Z33, so a 350Z.
Yeah.
Then he had a S15, which is still pretty new. Then he was S13. He just started going backwards.
Like, I kind of like the old stuff.
Yeah.
They don't build them like they used to.
And now time to pay the bills.
Thankfully, Katsuhiro Ueo hasn't quit drifting.
Oh, thank God.
That's close, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so old. He still competes in D1GP, and you can follow along with him and his season on his Instagram and Facebook page. In recent years, Katsuhiro's finished in the top 15 of the D1GP season championships in a field of 30 or more drivers in 2023. He won round 3 at the age of 51 behind the wheel of his Velino Vezerstra S15 Silvia. And so far this year, he showed the youngsters what's up by placing 11th at the season's kickoff event. And if I'm honest, 51 is like that's on the older side.
It is.
And I hope to be racing at
51. But he's still got it.
But yeah. 51, dude, that's the new 38.
That is, dude.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
In addition to ripping skids on the D1GP circuit for the past quarter century, Katsuhiro's been running his own shop since he got started in the sport. Garage Sift, where he and his workers tune and wrench on cars. developed parts for competition and for sale, and even operates a used car dealership to help fund the racing efforts.
Gotta have
which
that
is
car dealership.
Really common in Japan. Like almost every car shop is also a car dealership.
Huh.
Like that they all sense. Get their license and stuff and sell car parts because it's a side hustle.
Yeah.
I'm checking out what sense. They got for sale right now.
Oh, yeah. Anything good?
Yeah, what are we thinking?
Let's see.
What are you going to buy?
I don't know.
You just bought a S13.
I know, but, I'd like a Corolla, too.
I bet you would. Hope you have $30,000.
I think we can make that work.
It must be nice, dude.
We should just tell Jimmy that we're going to go take him to check out, like, an S14 and then take him to rehab.
No! Please! Is this an intervention?
Yeah.
Well, there's no Corollas I got for sale, so...
Oh, okay.
Burn.
Dang.
Well, you know what they do have over there? It's got a dyno for fine-tuning and as extensive of a shop as one would need to do basically any level of build. Lately on his Instagram, he's been testing out racing wheel and tire setups by Japanese company Valino that'll bolt on to his Toyota Barus with ease. By the looks of things, Katsuhiro's always been tinkering, engineering, and testing. He's still the curious and hardworking kid that he was when he helped out on his dad's fishing boat.
I forgot about the fishing boat.
I know.
Right.
Just
full
bring
circle.
It back to tuna, man.
From tuner to tuna.
Yeah, dude. Tuna to tuna. Tuna to tuner.
That's his catchphrase.
I'll tune your tuna.
That's a catchphrase, dude. That's like, I'll clean your clock.
One of his recent pickups is a fresh Toyota GR86, his Hachi's direct descendant. And it looks like he's been testing some high-performance wheels for the chassis.
That's sick. I'm glad he's still doing stuff.
He's still
That's
got so it, dude. Sick.
Yeah. It never relieves you.
No, it does. It's an unfortunate sickness. This guy's got 50-something wheels.
Yeah.
It's not
crazy.
A sickness.
You don't even...
I literally think it clinically is. Like, if you looked up a definition...
I don't think it is.
Hold on. I'm on WebMD right now.
The story of Katsuhiro Yuio is one of hard work and determination, refining one's craft, never standing still, and never taking no for an answer, which is... basically every story we read on this, he's a hard worker, never took no for an answer.
Can you imagine if we did one about somebody who was like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's like the shortest podcast.
Yeah, I think I've had it off.
You guys know John Smith? Yeah. Somebody said he wasn't good enough and like walked away.
Yeah. Dude, love that guy.
All right,
yeah.
Catch us on the next one. The everyman, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're on episode like 250 right now. There's a good chance we might get into those kind of stories eventually. His story is also a classic David and Goliath tale in that he wiped the floor with much more expensive and powerful hardware with his wholesome little 86. He's a legend among the drifting community across the entire world.
I still remember watching the first drifting clip. It was a guy named Katsuhiro Ueo on a mountain road in Japan. From that moment on, I was dead set on becoming a drifter.
Multiple Formula D championship Frederick Asbo told journalist Bradley Iger back in 2018. I bet many, many drifters would say the same exact thing. I think that's a pretty wholesome tale.
Yeah.
Guy's still doing it, even though he's so old, born in 1972.
So old. He's just tuning that tuna.
Yeah. I can't, like, what are those other guys up to now? The young guys that were calling him old.
I think they're still around.
They're still basically around, yeah. I just think... they don't hold the same like folklore that the guys in the beginning did. You know, you've got like Ueo, you've got Keiichi Tsuchiya, you've got Taniguchi. Mm-hmm. All those names are just so synonymous with drifting, but it's because they were the ones that kind of like started a lot of it, right? So just like how you remember like old school hip hop artists or people who started new genres, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But the other guys, they're definitely around, but I don't think they left the same kind of impact. It's harder to do that now.
Yeah. For sure. And I think like the fact that he's still doing it and competing at that level, like talk about like skateboarders from the 80s.
Yeah.
Like they can't hold a candle to anything happening today. Like sure you see like Tony Hawk landed 900 again at the age of 52, but he's like an exceptional case.
But
I feel like this is...
He broke a bunch of bones trying to do that.
He did. He like crippled himself trying to land a 900.
Yeah, it was almost sad to watch.
Yes.
What else was sad to watch was Sean White's kind of documentary.
Oh, I haven't seen that
yet.
Yeah,
it's really, really good. Oh. But that shows like how youth in that particular area is really, really good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just that he's still being mentioned alongside present day drifters is really cool. Yeah. I think it's a testament to like how influential he was. Mm-hmm.
I think all the Corolla guys too, like still know, you know, like
yeah,
if you're a Corolla guy, you're like, oh yeah, the Weo spec wheels. Like, I want to set my car up like a Weo. Like
that's sick. Yeah. It's cool that people still respect him enough. And the shit that he did 30 years ago, they're like, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
I also have it on good word that his AE86 is coming to the United States and is going through a restoration.
Oh.
The Ukes one? The Revolver Ukes one?
Yeah.
Sweet, dude. Yeah. That'd be cool to see.
Yeah, it's going out to the East Coast.
That's sick.
Yeah.
So funny, that car is like, you know, people are going to look at it and they're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, it's precious. But he beat the crap out of it.
It's a Corolla at the end of the day.
It's like, just so funny. Yeah. You know?
The whole chassis twisted.
It, for sure, you know.
But it'll go to auction, probably go for $100,000.
I know. He's like, yeah, it's cool. Show me that.
Well, cool. We got some listener mail. Jimmy, do you want to have the honors?
Yeah, I've never done a listener mail. Okay. I've never done a podcast. Okay, this is a listener mail from Jonathan.
Hey,
slime off a slug's toot to the best podcast on the internet.
What?
I always enjoyed how all the famous drivers and builders seem to interact in many ways in the gas universe. Emerson Fiddle Patty has been mentioned.
Jimmy, let him cook. Let him cook.
Been mentioned a few times and is a legend himself. I just discovered he built a V8 Volkswagen Beetle and wanted to share it.
That is cool.
Fittipaldi.
That's cool. See that.
That looks cool. I just see the picture. Yeah.
Well, Adam, Jimmy, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Where can people follow you on Instagram?
On Instagram, you can follow me at Knappic Racing, and you can check out my OnlyFans, Knappic Racing, also.
That's a real thing.
That's a real thing. There are no nudes, but plenty of car porn.
Hell yeah, dude. I love that.
Yeah.
Jimmy,
you can follow me at russelljimmy.jp, and you can look at my wheel collection as much as you want. And I can give you wheel estate tips, too.
Yeah.
Oh, wheel your estate DMs are going to get flooded now.
Yeah, dude.
What are the best specs for me?
Oh, I'll list them.
Thank you, audience members, for watching and listening. Go buy some merch at donutmedia.com. Go check out our main YouTube channel, Donut Media. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
This was fun.
This was
fun.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys
are
great.
Have me back.